ladies and gentlemen. Oh my God, I'm back.
I'm back too.
Who am I? I'm Mr. Agitator, lead singer-songwriter for V is for Villains.
And I am Fallon Flynn, backup vocalist and guitar player for V is for Villains. Many of you may also have heard me say, like almost exactly in that same voice, Fallon Flynn from V is for Villains on Gamerhead Radio.
That's true. So this is the follow-up episode to our last episode of the V is for Villains horror podcast we last released in 2012?
12, 13, I don't even know
five,
anymore.
5, 6 years ago?
It's been far like longer than it should be.
Yeah, it was about 6 years ago. It was the last time we did one of these. Halloween month is upon us, which made me sit down and say it's time to get back in the saddle.
Yes, we've been talking about it for about the last 4 or 5 weeks as Nick and I have been, dare I say, recording. Recording.
Oh, we've been doing a lot of writing, a lot of recording. So let's take a second. We're going to jump back and fill you guys in on some stuff that's been going on. Recently, my doctor, she benched me. So, as many of you know, I haven't been able to perform. I had to pretty much cancel every single contract that I had from, what was it, July of this year until July of next year. Yeah. Good news, though, I will be back on stage in July 2019 for Anime Midwest. Yeah, V is for Villains will return.
It's a thing. I mean, assuming we don't eat our hat, but I think that we've pretty much figured out that that will be a thing, so...
Oh, yeah, it's happening. It's definitely happening.
Yeah.
And along with that, we'll be bringing an entirely new album.
Whole album.
Whole brand new album.
We're probably going to be doing a series of these V is for Villains horror podcasts throughout the month of October. That's the plan when I come over to record. We're recording at the studio right now. Maybe we're going to keep doing this, and then we'll talk more about the recording as we kind of do these. But you guys are going to be stunned by the amount of shit that has been done in a very short period of time.
But today, we're here to talk horror films. In particular, one that caught my attention. It's an absolute throwback to 80s slasher films in every sense of the word. I am talking about Terrifier. This film was directed by Damien Leone. It stars Jenna Connell, Samantha Safidi.
Safidi? It's an Italian name.
David Howard Thornton in a breakout performance as Art the Clown.
Art the Clown. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Some of you guys may not even realize that you kind of maybe have a visual idea of what this movie looks like because Art the Clown looks very specific. And you can watch this movie on Netflix right now.
Yeah, it's streaming for free on Netflix. And, you know, it's funny. I'd heard some press about this film last year. You know, I heard people kind of talking about it, saying, you know, this thing's insane. It's a throwback. It's, you know, all this crazy stuff. I kind of shrugged and said, okay, another scary clown movie. Is that really where we're going here? But, you know, I'll be honest. I'll always investigate something, and it kind of left me with a feeling of absolute jaw-dropping, like, holy shit, they did that?
It's joyful because, you know, I had the same thing when Nick told me that he wanted to revive the horror series and that he wanted to do Terrifier. I told him, I said, I don't know, man, I've scrolled past it a few times on Netflix and it didn't really look like much to me. And he was like, no, watch it. It's fun, and it's the exact words he used just a minute ago, throwback.
What I really want to get into, though, is David Howard Thornton. That guy killed it. His performance was...
That's a terrible fucking pun.
Jesus Christ. That guy murdered it of weapons.
The reason we're not doing this is like a lineup to the live, actual, like, reviewing it along with the actual feed for the movie is because we didn't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to spoil anything, but he kills it a lot.
Yeah, he kills everything. But, you know, they say that acting is about choices. I feel like as a performer, that's something that I have in mind when I'm tracking or I'm on stage a lot. Is, you know, how am I delivering this line? Is what I'm saying, like, lyrically lining up with the intended emotion? You know, what are my hands doing? What's my face doing? These are all things that are considered. And if you're a decent performer to any extent, you consider these things before you even take a stab at it. You kind of go, pun too. You think about it and you go, okay, am I conveying what I want to with this performance? Now, this guy has something insane against him, and that's Art has no dialogue.
Not a single ounce.
He doesn't even make a sound.
No, not a sound. I don't think a sound in the entire movie.
There are points in the film where Art gets stabbed, Art gets hit, you know, by our final girls, plural, whatever. And he doesn't even utter a sound, you know.
He just emotes well based on what's happening to him.
This is a guy that absolutely knows how to use his body. This is a guy that knows how to use his face. He knows how to use the makeup and make the makeup work for him. You know, to me, very reminiscent of Robert Englund in that way. How Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger had a very good grasp of his physicality. You could tell that around the time Robert Englund was playing Freddy Krueger in Nightmare 4, he was very considered, this is Freddy's walk. This is how Freddy would walk. This is how Freddy would deliver this line. This is, you know, and it makes an iconic character. And if you want my opinion, Art the Clown in Terrifier has the makings of another iconic horror masterpiece.
Yeah, but that's something I thought about while I was watching the movie, too, is there's all this great stuff happening in the movie, and there are some really insane ideas. What this movie needs is for somebody to pick up this concept and flesh it out more with a slightly larger budget. Keep Damien Leone involved because he obviously understands something about what he was trying to make.
Yeah.
That translates with what, let's be honest, the movie, you can tell it has a shoestring budget, but but you get the impression that that's kind of partially intentional because this movie does have an 80s slasher kind of a throwback.
Yeah, right, you know? even down to the typeface on the titling at the beginning. Terrifier,
Fire.
big red letters, you know. Let's
This is not a cerebral horror movie,
no,
right? Like
no.
They're not, you can tell they're not trying to do like where Saw was trying to make you think about like
Right. Saw is like a long TV show.
Yeah, really. Yeah. And this is more like Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street or Halloween where he was trying to make an uncomfortable presence with something that was imposing itself upon other people.
Well, and even then, you know, they have the most simple premise, right? I mean, and they kind of approach it with a, well, if it isn't broken, you know, don't fix it kind of approach. But I also feel like they take certain elements of it and they go, you know, how can we make this more visceral? How can we make this something that's, You know what? To me, it felt like the film was constantly pitching to me, and in a good way and a bad way sometimes, where I felt like it was like, well, you know, this is fucked up, right? Right, Nick? Right? Watching it right now? This is fucked up. And I'm like, yeah. And it's like, well, you know, it would be real fucked up
but
if
wait,
he was walking
more.
Around with woman tits on.
I don't want to spoil anything for anybody. That scene was one of the moments in the movie where I was just like, oh, no.
Yeah,
wow,
it was pretty
why is this happening?
Gross.
I was so
pretty
uncomfortable.
Weird.
It was really gross.
So,
it was like put the lotion in the skin uncomfortable. Or put the lotion on the skin.
Or else it gets the hose again.
It was very uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was fucking weird. So, you know, like I said, I've been around the block. I've seen a lot of horror films. I've been watching horror since I was a kid. I felt like if six-year-old Nick saw this, he would approve.
Now, hold on. I want to block that in for a second. A lot of people don't realize this, but Nick and I have been watching horror movies since we were really little. Like in 2018 standards, like modern day child abuse little. We were watching horror movies really young, but I mean that was a kind of a normal thing, you know.
And I turned out normal, right?
Oh boy, did you? So we've been watching horror movies for a long time. Nick and I could sit down and scrape the barrel really far down for the amount of horror movies that we've watched together in our lives. We're huge fans.
Yeah, and I've discovered some gems, this being one of them. Mm-hmm. And one that we're going to get into on a future episode. I really want to do a David Cronenberg episode.
Oh my God.
Where we just go over all of David Cronenberg's
fucking
films.
Naked Lunch.
Because they're just genius. The guy is a fucking genius. And I love his work. And every time I discover one of his old films that I haven't either seen since I was a kid or I never knew about, I'm always blown away. But that's
a different
episode.
Is he a genius or is he mad?
Yes, the answer is yes. But I kind of pulled David Cronenberg into this idea because I feel like, along with Terrifier, Damien Leone has a very good sense of keeping things practical. Let's do practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think for the genre, it works really well. You know, and I think what they pulled off with what had to be a shoestring budget was just absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. Like, the best thing I can think to do right now is kind of step back. Let me kind of throw the premise out there for you guys listening. So the film opens with, and possible spoiler alert. We may be going into spoiler territory on some of this, but I think we should just kind of roll with it, review it while we kind of talk about it.
Yeah, let's just say from this point on, we're if you're going to continue to listen, expect there to be some spoilers.
It.
If
and,
you've seen it,
you know,
right along.
And if you don't give a shit and you want to listen, hey, stay with us. Who gives a fuck?
Maybe
right?
It'll even intrigue people into watching.
To watching, it, so. Right? And you should. You should watch it. So the film starts with, once again, an homage, a very homage to Nightmare on Elm Street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have Art the Clown
getting dressed.
You know, it's Halloween time. It's his time of year, you can tell. He's putting his makeup on. You know, he's getting his stuff done. One of the things that I love about the film is even by the end, we walk away with more questions about Art than we even had close to answers.
Yeah.
You know, you really don't know who or what this guy or thing is. I have some theories on who or what it may be, but, you know, those are just my theories.
But we'll save those for the end of the show. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I have some ideas on that, too.
But, you know, the film opens in a manner that doesn't give you a hint other than that there's a guy underneath this makeup and this costume.
Presumably.
That's really all we know.
Because you do kind of feel like, maybe he's human?
Maybe.
But the ending of the movie makes you wonder.
Right.
You know.
You kind of sit there going, I'm not sure about this. So, you know, we are treated into a Nightmare on Elm Street homage, a character getting ready, Halloween night. He's going out, and you can tell nothing good's going to come of this. He meets two girls out there. Of course, you have, like, the very... I'm skipping over some stuff purposefully, but you meet the very standard, stereotypical, this is going to be our final girl trope.
Yeah.
Dark hair. She has the blonde friend,
mm-hmm.
you know, who's wearing the they're wearing the skimpy Halloween costumes, you know, and man, God, their interactions are incredible.
They are great, but they do a good job in this movie of bucking certain tropes, but keeping the ones that you care about. They have the final girl trope, but it's not necessarily
the way that you would think,
right?
And the way that they play it off, I really, really enjoy. So, you know, this character, this kind of malevolent, evil figure, you know, that you can tell is cartoonishly evil, right? Kind of strolls into this area where they're having, what is it, pizza. They're getting ready to order some pizza, and they're sitting in this restaurant. It's Halloween night, and they're kind of going through the standard generic, we've just been, you know, dancing and drinking. Like, I'm so shit-faced. Yeah. You know.
Like the Six Corners Wicker Park at 2 a.m. on Halloween in Chicago.
Except for that, you know, and it's funny you brought that up, because I was thinking about, you know, when I like to put on my costume on Halloween night and go to Chicago and hide behind the trash cans and jump out and chase people.
Nobody does that but you.
And Art.
And bums.
I am Art. Yeah, but that's the joke, is when I catch them, I'm like, ha 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 ha, can I borrow a dollar? I need to
go to Flash Taco.
That's right. I need a taco bad. So, you know, no, it made me think of that, and it made me think about Terrifier in that context. They don't tell you what city they're in. I don't think they do.
No, they don't specify. I think but that's part of what I think is good about it. They try to make it, that's another throwback to the horror theme, the slasher theme of the 80s, is Elm Street was supposed to be any town USA.
Yeah, right,
and
right.
That's how
Nightmare
this is any city
neighborhood,
USA.
Right.
Yeah, they don't specify. They make it clear that they're in a suburban or in an urban environment, but they don't really specify where, that I recall.
Yeah, no, I agree. I didn't remember catching it, because if it was Chicago, if it was New York, and if it was 2 a.m. and they were getting pizza, it would be Art the Clown and like 800 other people.
Yeah.
Walking around.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
He would definitely have his choice of victim, I guess. But
although that, I do, this suspiciously looks like some New York style pizza to me.
It really does. So, you know, they kind of have these great interactions where, you know, I want you to imagine that. You go to a restaurant, it's 2 a.m, you sit down, and you're having your pizza, and you're talking to your friend, and you look to your right, and there's a fucking mime sitting there staring at you.
That sounds like a VS for Villains show.
It sounds like us when we're done playing, and I'm just like, hey, what's up? Nah. No, you know, but it does, but that's kind of what happens. That was, I think, where I started really riding with the film and going, okay, this is funny and kind of great.
It does have some funny moments, like, because, you know, intentional and unintentional.
It's it's the most cartoonish thing that could ever happen, is you just look over and you're like, oh, it's that clown at midnight.
Okay. But the primary two characters, you know, that you see kind of most frequently at the beginning of the movie, they have this kind of, Nick's had this great interaction, but part of what makes them great is they are tropes in a way. Like, they're definitely based right. on sort of things that you see in slasher movies. The blonde girl is kind of ditzy and stupid and a little obnoxious, right. and she's really kind of loud and in everybody's face. She's in Art the Clown's face.
Oh, yeah.
One of the most uncomfortable. Like, it's funny because the movie gets really violent, but at that point, it's not super
it's kinda,
violent. It's
you're
just
not sure where it's going to go. Yeah. And I wasn't sure. I didn't know what was going to happen. So I was kind of uncertain. Maybe this is comedic. Maybe this is going to be like the legendary Tucker and Dale versus Evil, where it turns out to be funny. I didn't know
great.
What to expect.
Or Cabin in the Woods.
They see this fucking clown sitting there, and the blonde girl gets up, and she walks over to the clown, and she's like, let's get selfies for Instagram and stuff like that. And she's like sitting in his lap and like making fun of him, and like he's got this little black bowler hat on, like this tiny little bowler hat. And she like knocks it off on purpose, like oops. And,
well,
like,
she pulls it and like smacks him in the face because it's on an elastic string,
right? And you know what's funny? He looks like the fucking angriest human being I've ever seen.
He's not happy,
and it's funny. Like, you're watching this scene, and the only thing that was going through my head was like, I feel like I'm watching a 2-year-old putting its head in a bear's mouth.
Yeah.
Like, you're watching this happen, and I'm just sitting there going, like, that girl's going to get fucking killed.
Well, no, because you know there's a wind-up to the pitch. Like, oh, yeah, that's the wind-up to the pitch. And the thing is, part of what's funny about this movie is it has what I can only describe to you as, like, slingshot levels of pacing. Like, he's very subtle, and he's very Art the Clown is very
kind of
expressive and flamboyant. And one second you think that he's the kind of dude that'll just, like, you know, break a couple fingers, and then the next minute he's doing something
fucking insane,
you know. And then the movie will go back the other way, and it'll kind of mellow out again in a way.
And what I liked in that scene is, you're sitting there, you're watching this moment, she's sitting on his lap, and she's taking a picture, and she's posting it to Instagram to show all of her followers. And she's clearly making fun of this guy. And there is this incredibly bizarre power play going on there, which is incredibly played by Catherine Cochran. You know, she plays Dawn in the film, the blonde, one of our two main girls that we are introduced to in the beginning. And, you know, you can tell by her performance, if we're talking about acting and all the choices that somebody makes while bringing that performance to light, you know, her choices really informed me a lot that this was a girl who probably spent all night getting hit on, who was a little bit on a power trip in that way, and, you know, was having fun kind of tearing people down. And there was this kind of interesting dynamic for her where, you know, you can tell she feels invincible, untouchable. And, you know, you're sitting there going, like, but your head's in that fucking bear's mouth.
Do you know what
the
archetype is? The archetype is what you would see defined as, like, almost pop culture comedically as, like, your garden variety Instagram bad bitch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she's kind of ditzy and a little kind of
creepy. Right.
But she doesn't give a fuck.
Harmless.
You know what I mean?
She doesn't mean any harm to anybody.
Yeah.
But
she's just
kind
being
kind of
like
asshole.
Loud and obnoxious.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm telling you this right now. And that's the funny thing. Watching it as a fly on the wall. If I were in that scenario, if I were in that scene, and I was having pizza after a show, and I'm in my costume, I'm Mr. Agitator sitting there, and I look to my left, and Art the Clown was sitting there, I would leave my pizza, get the fuck up, and never come back.
Well, I would take my pizza because I can't leave it behind.
I wouldn't acknowledge it. I would just leave. Because, you know, that's the thing. It's funny because I feel like that character, the Art the Clown character, I feel like he's looking for a rise. It's like, I feel like maybe if you just don't acknowledge it, it doesn't exist.
So, Mr. Agitator, then. No wonder you like this fucking movie.
Maybe he's in the crowd at our shows. Maybe he's there just jamming.
That's true.
You know? Like, if you don't acknowledge me, I don't exist. Mr. Agitator's like, no, please, there's, you know watch what?
There's
the
a,
show.
There's a thread tying this together, because isn't that the entire idea behind Freddy Krueger 2 is like, just don't
right.
acknowledge
yeah,
him.
Right.
Like, you don't, take his power away.
You don't say his name. Don't, right. say his name. Don't say his name.
So Voldemort, Freddy Krueger, Art the Clown, and Mr. Agitator are the same guy.
You say my name and I appear That's behind true. You. I'm like, hey, you got any ice cream in here? You know, the thing is, I feel like, oh, there was another film that I saw recently, a horror film, The Bye Bye Man, that was very much in that vein. Don't say it, don't think it, don't say it, don't think it. Bye Bye Man. And then he appears.
So Candyman?
Yeah, fucking pretty much.
They're all the same
Only
fucking
it's
movie.
Like, if Candyman sucked so bad, and you know what's funny, and I'm not making this up, Jenna Connell, who plays Tara in the film, she's in The Bye Bye Man.
Is she really?
She oh really God. Is.
Yeah,
she's the
brunette character opposite, you know, our blonde Catherine Corcoran played right. Dawn. So she right. plays Tara Hayes.
So she's in The Bye Bye Man, also a film where I guess if you just don't acknowledge evil, maybe it doesn't exist. I'm not sure if that's accurate, but that movie, the difference was she made something here that was probably budgetarily and on a release scale, very lowly regarded, being Terrifier. And then she was in Bye Bye Man, where I couldn't turn on the fucking TV without seeing an ad for it every 5 seconds. And it was one of the worst horror films I've
really?
Seen in 10 years.
That's sad.
It was really bad. Hey, good for her. She's working either way. But, you know, I feel like there are some kind of similar themes in that idea of maybe don't acknowledge it. But that's what I would do. If I was sitting there, I would get my ass up and I would leave. But it's funny, they really, I feel like that's how the film plays out from start to finish, is you have this moment of cat and mouse in a weird way, where as a bystander, as a viewer, as somebody who's just watching this from home, you're watching the toddler put its head in the bear's mouth
yeah.
over and over and over again.
And part of what makes art interesting is you know damn good and well the second you see him, he's going to murder some people.
Oh, God.
But you're not yeah. really ever certain how. And that's kind of the weird thing about
right.
him. This was one thing I wasn't sure that I liked about the movie or not. You're so comfortable with horror movie tropes
yeah.
that if a horror movie, if a slasher,
oh, wait,
if a killer...
You're saying this is something you're not sure if you like or
well,
you
Well,
I'm excited.
About
I want
it.
To hear this because I'm ready to debate.
Because I know what you're going to say in response to this.
How do
it's
you
not
know?
That I just
What
like
am I going
to
say?
What
am
I'm
I gonna
saying
say?
Is...
what am I going to say?
You're going to say that that's part of what makes it great. But the thing
yeah,
is...
I'm ready.
Art the Clown is a really interesting character to me
yeah.
because on a design level, he succeeds at something very particular. In a very close release window to something like the reboot to It, where
yeah,
that's like
yeah.
you know what I would say that the rebooted It is not any less iconic visually.
Oh yeah,
like that he's gonna that clown is going to be very standout to a generation, right? The same way
you
that
mean Pennywise,
that, yeah, the
yeah,
new
Pennywise,
absolutely. The same way that the original Pennywise was
yeah.
standout to, I mean, our generation and generations just before. Art the Clown succeeds at being an individual clown in a sea of clowns, right?
I agree with that.
In
yeah.
a sea, in a very close time frame to some popular clowns in the horror genre. But what's strange about him is he will kind of rail back and forth between being this oddly, like, the level of his violence ranges from relatively uncomfortable and tame to fucking extreme,
yeah.
which I liked.
Right.
But one thing I didn't like is they would ping pong back and forth between those levels of violence, where one second he would just be a little uncomfortable and imposing, and the next second he would be doing, you know, something. I'm not trying to spoil the kills, even though we're in spoiler territory. I mean,
yeah, I think it's at this point it's okay.
Yeah,
I mean
cutting
we've
somebody.
Kind of-
the problem that I had is he would go from cutting somebody in half down the center to just whipping out a gun and starting to shoot people,
oh.
which was kind of like...
That was actually a very big moment that I wanted to talk about, the gun.
The gun,
go
because
ahead.
It makes him... That to me, This is the thing that makes me wonder about where they... This character could go anywhere. I'll use Jason Voorhees as an example.
Yeah.
In the first two Friday the 13th movies, first three, really,
yeah,
Jason Voorhees is decidedly very human, right?
Yeah.
And then by the time you get to
there's something fucked up about him.
Yeah.
And something supernatural.
But that's what I'm getting at is by the time you get to like five... Six, seven.
By the time you get seven,
there
he's
is
a
an
fucking
undeniably
zombie.
Yeah, yeah. Like supernatural element.
No,
to Jason.
He's absolutely.
And that's the thing
that
that's interesting about Art the Clown. They could take him in either direction because the movie ends in such a way that he maybe could be
supernatural or maybe not.
But whipping out a gun in moments of desperation or in frustration when there's nothing else at his disposal makes him decidedly seem very human too.
Right.
So I'm not.
Okay.
I didn't hate it, but it's not. It's one of these things where it's like, do I feel an oddness about that? Because
are you
it's
talking
not
about
what
the gun kill?
Well, the gun kill in specific, which was brutally shot, and really, I was like, oh fuck, man! Like it looked rough.
Yeah, yeah.
Like rough as in violent. It's not that I hated it, but I felt a sense of like, should I be satisfied with this? Because it twists the final girl solution on its head, which is fine.
Which is
I'm glad that there was a change there. The one thing I didn't like about it is I liked her character. I liked Tara.
She was
engaging as a character, and I liked her.
Yeah, I thought she was great. Her character design was fantastic.
She had all of the makings of a perfect final girl, except for getting shot in the fucking face.
Yeah, yeah. Well, spoilers. So,
yeah,
like we were saying. But, you know, let's go ahead and give a little context to this. So what we're talking about right now, I think, is a pivotal moment in the film, actually.
Mm-hmm. I knew you were going to want to chew the fat on this part.
Well, it's important. It's incredible. So... You know slasher horror films. If you're a fan of that genre, if you're a fan of Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, any of these things, you figure out the killer's MO.
There's a formula.
What's in that MO is the killer. That's how they operate. You know, Freddy Krueger will, at some point, you know, say a pun, and then, and I stab you.
Yeah.
You know, or like, I say a pun, and then I turn into a dog with a man face.
Faster than a bastard maniac.
Right, something really fucking weird. And Jason Voorhees will say nothing. And then he'll just, you know, punch a hole through your head. It's, you know, something like that. So, like, you know, you figure out the killer's MO. Jigsaw's going to test your resolve. But you figure out and saw that if you bleed a little with everyone willingly, then you'll survive. Right? So you figure out these MOs. With Art the Clown, there didn't really seem to be one.
That's what's strange about him.
Oh, and I love it. So... He's chasing, doing cat and mouse after killing the blonde girl viciously. Viciously. Vicious kill.
Yeah,
savage.
It was rough.
Actually so savage that there was a moment where it was in this just absolute borderline between cartoonish ridiculousness
and a little bit
absolute
realistic.
Disgustingness.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, you're sitting there going like, no, 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 this is happening.
It was, I would say, Saw levels of gore. Without the, it wasn't as flamboyant as Saw. Like it was a little bit more like you. The idea was more uncomfortable than the budget allowed.
Well, right? And I agree with that 100%. Now we're talking about the death of Dawn, the blonde character, the one who took the selfie. But after that, so Tara survives. That's her best friend. She's running. They're stuck in this building together. Her and Art the Clown. She's trying to escape. They have the standard final girl. Moments of her kicking him in the face and running and then stabbing him and then back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And so she's getting ready to hit Art. What was it with? Like a tire iron? I forget what it
was
that she had.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was that she had.
So she had a weapon and she was getting ready to beat the shit out of Art. And he pulls his pant leg up, whips a fucking gun out and shoots
her. Yeah, he has like a Glock in his boot.
Yeah, he pulls a fucking gun out and just bam. And she hits the ground.
Yeah, but he shoots her once, and I think it's in the leg, the thigh
He hits her somewhere rough.
Yeah, but he hits her in the thigh, so he doesn't kill her. He immobilizes her.
Right, he gets up, and he goes to unload the clip in her face, and he's empty, and he kind of frowns. Oh.
Oh, so sad. Oh.
So he drops the clip. He's been carrying this bag around all night.
And they ask at the beginning, what's in that bag? And you assume immediately, where did your mind go as a horror movie fan? You're like, it's got to be body parts, right?
I thought, no.
I thought body parts.
I thought there was probably a person in there.
I thought pieces. I thought pieces. That's what I thought.
Really? See, I just thought there was probably like a
But
dead
that's what makes it interesting. That's right. not what's in the fucking bag. What's in the box?
What's in the bag is a lot, or there are a lot of improvised home killing and torture devices.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and it's kind of disturbing when you see him going through them. You know, so he goes back upstairs, leaves her there, and it's an uncomfortably long scene, actually.
Yeah.
Because she's down there suffering, and it's kind of
sad. And you're like, is she crawling away? What is she going to do? Because she's the final girl. She's going to get away, right?
So he loads the gun, comes back down, and just fucking shoots her in the
Unloads
face.
A full clip.
Like, bam,
into
bam,
her face.
Bam, just over and over. And you're like, oh, no.
Final girl is not the final girl.
However, I will say this. Her sister, she calls near the beginning of the film to come pick her up because their car breaks
down. There's a flat tire, slash tire.
That's what it was. And so she calls her sister, who's a college student and clearly is upset and being bothered by it.
Yeah, she's the polar opposite of these characters who were out like late night drinking, Halloween. Like she was at home in her sweatpants being studious.
Right. Then like I think her roommate came back and was getting some man.
Yeah, she didn't want to come pick her sister and her friend up, but yeah. I think her roommate showed up and
was drunk
and they were getting all handsy and it made her uncomfortable.
Yeah,
she was like, fuck it, I'm going out.
Go get you. But I will say this, you know, I was watching it, Audrey and I were watching it together, and, you know, I kind of looked at Audrey and I was like, they're going to pass the torch to her. I did call that.
Yeah, I got to give them kudos, too.
I really feel like they're going to pass the torch.
Because those two women look absolutely like they could be sisters.
Oh, yeah,
like, I had to look at them for a minute and go, is this the same person? Like, they look very similar as people. So that was good casting
in terms of Samantha Safidi that plays Victoria. So, you know, and she's great, too.
Yeah,
and
I liked her, too.
You know, Samantha Safidi did an absolutely wonderful job of playing a final girl that I don't like in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
You know, her character, maybe that was just me, but I felt like her character was such an ass.
Yeah,
she was. I was just like, God, what a fucking dick.
But she also doesn't really embody what the on paper like kind of final
archetype
girl
is.
Yeah,
right.
Which is part of why it worked okay. So let me ask you a question: do you think that anybody might feel my initial reaction to seeing our original final girl character Tara get shot in the face was? It was like an oh shit moment.
That.
But then I had a moment afterwards where I was like, I liked this character.
Uh-huh.
I thought she was cool enough. She fit the archetype in a way that I thought was going to pay off. And then when it didn't, I felt a slight sense of robbery.
Yes.
Like I was just like, I didn't want this character to die because it did. I just didn't go the way I expected, which is a good and a bad thing.
What do I think?
Yeah,
about
do you
that?
Think that was a good thing?
Yeah, I said, you know what? Honestly, and I mean this 150%. When he pulled the gun out, I was shocked because I was like, oh, wow, he's got a gun. And Audrey looked at me in the moment and was just like, yeah, I mean, like, why do we always think that they couldn't have a gun? And I kind of thought about it and I was like, actually, you know, that's true. He probably should have a gun, you know, and it makes sense that he would. You know, I feel like so that in and of itself shocked me because you never see that in these kind of movies. It's always about the chase. It's always about the cat and mouse. It's always about, well, we've got to give her an obstacle she can actually overcome.
Mm-hmm.
See, and, you know, a gun is not a very intriguing obstacle. It's used in a million action movies.
Yeah,
right?
But, you know, in the real, though. Overcoming that obstacle, you can't really get around that.
Right, and that was the point. So what do I think, honestly, in that scenario? I applauded it 100%, and I think it's a good thing if the audience feels disappointed by that, and I think that they should feel disappointed by that, and I think that it was the director's intention to make you feel disappointed by that.
But you know what? It says something about whoever it is under that makeup. Which you kind of do wonder. You see him getting ready at the beginning. You see him getting dressed and putting on a costume. And it's not a very complicated costume. But then you get to the mouth. You get to the mouth, which you're like, is that a prosthetic? Is this a dude wearing the prosthetic to make himself intimidating?
Right.
Or is this guy otherworldly? Because it does look very otherworldly and like fucked up, right? But then a demon wouldn't whip out a gun. But then again, would a demon you? Would go, well, if this person's going to get away, yeah. I'm going to use the gun because well. My goal is to kill as many people as possible. Then he has a lot in common with, like, you know, Patrick Bateman right. from American Psycho.
So let me break this down, and I am a firm believer in this. They won on every level. They fucking won on every level because we're even sitting here talking about this.
No, I'll tell you the and one level they debate, didn't win on.
This debate's even happening about, well, should he use a gun? Should he not use a gun? Is he a demon? Is he not a demon?
Well, no, it's different.
Is it a... No, and what I mean by that is if this was the fucking bye-bye man, we would just be sitting here going, oh yeah, my review was...
I said bye-bye to the bye-bye like, man.
Right. Yes. We'd be sitting there for a fucking hour going like, well, that sucked and that's sad. Because there's a lot of wasted talent in that film.
But that's what's neat about it. One second he seems supernatural. The next moment he's whipping right. out a gun. Right. And then, and he uses the gun in an unconventional way more than once. Haven't talked about this. There's a character in the movie who's kind of like a maintenance man, janitor right. type character played by Matt McAllister. He plays Mike the Exterminator.
Right. And they, man, once again, perfectly cast. That guy just, he looks like he would be a janitor.
That dude,
like
right?
the idea yeah. of what you think a janitor would be.
What I liked about this guy is he was the singular voice of sanity right. around all these people. Because here's the one thing I observed in the movie. At no point in time during the movie with our primary two starting characters, were they in any way ensnared?
Right.
Or entrapped. They could have walked
no,
their
they
ass
could have left at any point.
To somewhere. They were not trapped. Right. They were right. not stuck.
Yeah.
They trapped themselves by yeah. not leaving. And there's a scene where Mike the Exterminator is trying to help Tara before she gets right. shot in the face. Or no, is it her sister? It's her sister.
I think it's her sister.
It's her sister.
We haven't seen this film like a million times, yeah. just throwing that out there, so we may get some details wrong.
So he's helping his sister, rescues her, you know, her sister once she inevitably sort of discovers that her sister's been shot in the face.
Right.
And which is sad, that Art yeah. the Clown is there, you know, trying to murder her now. She gets away because the exterminator helps her, and he calls the police, and he's like, you need to get your fucking ass down here.
Right, right.
There's a murderer here, and he's insane. And she's right. like, well, I'm just going to need you to stay on the line. He's like, I'm going to stay on the fucking phone. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah.
like the only voice of reason Absolutely. In this movie where he's like, you know, we don't have to be here. Shit. We can all leave. Yeah, and inevitably yeah. literally gets his face stomped in.
He does.
Yeah.
He does. Poor guy.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
I'm going to say this. I feel like...
We didn't talk about the cat lady.
No, we didn't talk about the fucking cat lady. We will get to the cat lady.
She was the only weird...
kind of...
why you here kind of a character.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't really... I think it was to show that Art the Clown has no empathy. I feel like that's what her character was there for.
Yeah, but the ping pong flip flop thing. Because there is a moment... And I got to tell you, it is one of the unsettling moments of the movie... Mm-hmm. Where Art the Clown snuggles into this woman's bosom and sucks his fucking thumb.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
just so uncomfortable. Yeah.
Right, because he's like acting like a child.
Yeah, he's like acting
yeah,
like
really,
a baby.
It's really bizarre. It's yeah, really strange yeah. to watch, but it's...
And then he wears her bosom.
Yeah, it's so fucked up.
Spoiler alert, he wears her bosom and he wears basically like her whole like ass, crotch, thigh, like hip
yeah, so he
region is like a pair of
pieces.
Underwear.
He's
yeah.
like, he looks like, what if Marilyn Manson's Mechanical Animals booby suit looked really fucking gross and weird?
Well, it looked like, what if he was wearing somebody's, basically, a woman's chest and her hips, ass, yeah. and crotch as a pair of underwear?
It's fucking gross.
He's just wearing this,
You're
like,
just hearing you
wear.
Say that. It's yeah. so fucking disgusting.
Puts the lotion on its skin.
Or else it gets that hose again. So, you know, I'm going to say this, and I feel like... The character's motivation, I feel like who the character is and what he wants, and I feel like things like the gun moment, it's all in his name, Art. Art the Clown.
Performance art?
He's a performance artist. He's doing this for the creation of it all. He's reveling in creating the most twisted or the most artistically... disturbing moments that he can. He's like that fucking mime that you walk by on the street that's irritating and it's like, you know, you're kind of like, why would somebody do that? Why would somebody devote their entire fucking life to standing there and like pretending like he's in a fucking box in front of me?
So it's Mr. Agitator again.
Yes.
This has been our review of T is for Terrifier.
Yeah. So, you know, like but there is some truth in that. And I feel like, you know, maybe it's fucked up that I get it on that level. Maybe not the homicide end of it, but I do understand this idea of wanting to push the envelope and push people's buttons and, you know, get them to think about something a little bit differently for 5 fucking minutes. Just take 5 fucking seconds and think about the world around you in a different light. Stop being so
predictable
and comfortable with the formalities. And that is going back to it. What I loved about the gun moment. That is what I loved about the informal and unceremonious dispatching of the final girl in the film, because A, there shouldn't be a final girl, you know, there shouldn't. B, why is one girl deemed final girl over another girl, which, why couldn't Dawn have been the final girl, because she's blonde and she's loud and clearly is very sexual.
Why couldn't Mike the Exterminator have been the final girl?
Seriously, like that is something with tropes that I like. I love seeing them get torn down, because I feel like they make for a lackluster viewing experience for most people. And then you're constantly sitting there going, oh, well, I know where this is going.
But there's a comfort to the final girl, though. Look how excited people are for Halloween coming out in a couple weeks. And
yeah.
I mean, like, Laurie Strode, especially the way she's portrayed in these trailers, at least, is like the epitome of the final girl.
Well, she is the final girl. Yeah. She's really, outside of the main girl from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which only predated Halloween by a couple of years, and even then, you know, she wasn't really revved up. This really is the
first... Did you just say revved up with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre with a fucking chainsaw joke? Jesus Christ.
I was
waiting
for you to catch it.
Horrible.
It's horrible. You gotta tie it together.
I don't want to play in this band anymore.
You're playing!
I am.
But, you know, I feel like that it's important to give that acknowledgement that, yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis, her character of Laurie Strode in Halloween, this was the creation
the prototype
of the final
for
girl.
The final girl. Yeah.
This is where the final girl came to life.
So there's a comfort to that formula, but you talk about the gun moment flip-flopping, getting back to Terrifier.
Yeah.
The gun moment is a flip-flop twice. First, when he first pulls it out and shoots, you know, our original final girl character in the face, and then... He has a standoff at the end of the movie where the cops draw their gun on him. The cops from when Mike the Exterminator called finally show up.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's you think he's going to do what you expect him to do, which is pull the gun, turn around, and either fire on the cops or the cops blow him away before he can pull the trigger. And instead, he pulls the gun out and sticks it in his mouth. It blows his fucking head off.
Right. And all I heard from that was, you know... Thank you! Good night! Woo!
Mr. Agitator.
You know? Like, he was done performing for the night. That's fine.
That's it. Show's done.
Show's over.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like when you really, like I said, you look at those conventions and how they've been flip-flopped in this, I think the message is very clear, and I feel like the filmmaker was telling me right through the screen, fuck you for expecting it. You know? Because we're not doing that here.
Yeah, and the thing is that with Art the Clown, the character ultimately ends up, if he does one thing consistently in that movie where there's no rubber banding, you kind of see the one recurring theme is he's the thing that is most consistent despite his inconsistency in the movie, and it is this one thing. He pulls out the gun because he refuses to let the kill get away.
Right.
He pulls out the gun and kills himself because he's not going to let other people tell him how to operate his show.
Right.
It's literally it's a textbook concept of cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah.
And that's what ends up making him kind of interesting ultimately is that what ends up getting most slashers killed in the formula that we've been talking about for the episode is there's always some fuck up that comes from something they probably could have very easily avoided.
Sure.
But that ends up not happening here. This dude is so determined to set out to do everything he's going to do that even in the end, he does not allow the police to take from him what he can't set out to do. He keeps the whole thing is in his control the entire time, all the way up to the end of this movie.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And it's also interesting to note that this is also a sequel to All Hallows Eve. It was by Damien Leone, the same director, guy who created Art the Clown. It was a series of shorts that they made into a feature-length film. And I thought that it's funny, I saw part of it like 3 or 4 years ago. I actually started watching it. I was distracted by something else. I put it down, and I never got to finish it. And I want to go back and finish it now. Kind of strange how that kind of came and went, and I didn't even know that they were connected until after the fact. But yeah, you can tell that it's a labor of love, that this is a passion project for the filmmaker. Mm-hmm. This is something that he clearly believed in very much and wanted to really share with the world and kind of play with the, like we've been talking about, tropes, mm-hmm. and deconstructing them. So
you can tell that he's a big enough fan of the horror film tropes that he could break them apart and try to change the formula a little bit for this movie. You know, and let's be clear, no pun intended, this movie is not high art by any stretch, but he knows that. You can tell when you're watching the movie that it's supposed to be a little grindhouse, it's supposed to be a little 80s slasher.
Right.
He's fine with it, very comfortable with it being relatively low budget. The only complaint I had with the movie, generally, like outright, is it's lit like shit. Like the lighting is terrible. Other than that, for what he had to work with, is very serviceable.
Well, let's go ahead and step back then, and let's wrap this up in a way, just by saying, give me two things that you thought worked and two things that you thought didn't.
I thought Art the Clown worked exceptionally, and I think that that's without that character, the rest of the movie could cut that out.
Sure, sure.
But he's great.
Well, the same way that, you know, in the original concept for Halloween, they didn't know what Michael Myers was going to look like. He was just described as the shape.
The shape. Yeah.
And then when they ended up finding the iconic mask and putting it all together, the film came together.
But like, they're lucky that came out the way that it did with him, too, because the shape is pretty vague. Like,
right.
Mama June from Honey
yeah.
Boo Boo is a shape. You know what I mean? So, like, that could have been anything.
I would watch that movie.
No, I wouldn't. I want my money back. I haven't even seen it.
I would be the first one to go
back.
See that. What are you talking about?
Those were the two things I thought worked.
What are the two things that you thought didn't?
Two things that I thought did not work.
I mean, there can be more. It doesn't have to be one thing.
You know, it lies somewhere between understanding that this is a kind of pulpy, low-budget slasher film, mm-hmm. and maybe like it was intentional, but there were a couple of performances that were kind of bad. Like, yeah. Some of the acting was a little wonky in spots. Dialogue was kind of wonky in spots. But
what in particular did you think was bad?
So the blonde character, she played the character and the archetype for the character very well, but her mm-hmm. delivery of shit was super amateur. And I can't tell if that was intentional or not.
Okay.
Because she hit all the beats she should for mm-hmm. the type of humor that she was trying to convey and sort of like the setup for her interactions with Art, but she was not super great. But the dialogue was not great either, and that's probably my other thing that I think is maybe just okay. Some of the writing, some of the dialogue writing was kind of funny. And not ha-ha funny like, oh, that's nobody talks like that kind of funny. So, but again, low-budget slasher, it's not high art, so you got to kind of like temper your expectation there. So I don't know if I'm just being too hard on it or not in that way.
I don't know.
But it didn't hamper my ability to enjoy the movie either.
I mean, I guess it doesn't matter because it's still your opinion, right?
That's true.
So the two things that I thought worked very well were the performances. Mm. I totally bought it. You know, it drew me in and they actually held my attention. The other thing that I thought worked really well outside of the performances was the pacing.
Pacing was really good.
It starts, it moves, it revs up, and it just keeps going.
Yeah.
Like, they don't really let up. I was genuinely, if there was ever a moment where I thought, well, I'm going to take a break and go grab a drink and use the bathroom or whatever, you know, that moment never came.
Yeah.
I was sitting there from start to finish, meaning start being the point when the plot started moving.
Yeah. It's a pretty brisk movie, and it's not like a 2-hour movie.
No,
it's like
no.
an hour and 20-minute movie or something like this. So it's barely feature length.
Despite the fact that the pacing was breakneck, it juggled this incredible Herculean task of having a fast pace, a pace that draws you in and keeps you with it, while also still feeling like the longest night of someone's life.
Yeah, it did. It was very successful at pulling off, well, where is this going to go now?
Yeah, and it just, you felt and like that was by because the of end, art. You really went through something.
Yeah.
You went through something horrible
yeah,
at the
it
end.
Was, it wasn't good. I didn't feel good by the end.
Exactly.
But so let's talk about the end. So the end kind of ties itself. The sort of where we were talking about where it could become kind of supernatural is, you know, Art the Clown shot himself in the head. And he ends up in the morgue in a body bag, and the coroner is there at some weird hour, you know, that weird twilight 3 to 4 a.m. hour mm-hmm. where nothing good ever happens. And he unzips the body bag and kind of like besmirches Art, and then Art's arm comes up and starts choking him, and he sits up out of the
course.
Bag and
like
strangles the guy. And then they kind of like back away from it and imply that that dude just died. So, I mean, Art like stuck a gun in his mouth and blew the back of his head off. So then there's that supernatural
right.
Jason element where
right.
he's like, you thought this was just a dude, but then it goes into sort of the supernatural there. It's kind
See,
of strange.
And I'm embodying the idea of the character as just a force. He's like a legitimately.
So if he's the shape, the force.
He's the force. Yeah. He's very much, in my opinion, and what I've seen, he's just a force of unrelenting evil. And if you survive it, you end up forever changed.
If you're angry enough, then you continue on.
Right. If you survived what happened, then you actually are forever changed by what took place in that night. And I think that was kind of the point, and hence wrapping into the character's name. That's what good art does to you. You go through it, and it changes you. And when it changes you, you know, that was the sign of something that had a place in your life for whatever reason.
I'm gonna make a terrible joke. If that's what good art does to you, then bad art shoots you in the face.
Oh, God. the two things that I thought didn't work, number one, was some of the cinematography and the lighting.
Yeah, so you and I agree that the lighting was kind of smoky hot garbage.
Now, the thing with the lighting, to me, it wasn't as much the lighting as much as it was the filters. I felt like there were a lot of filters used to give it kind of an old saturated look
mm-hmm.
or to make it look, and it just
kind of film grainy.
Yeah. This film didn't need it.
Yeah, but the problem was it wasn't consistent because some of the
right,
scenes
exactly.
there was no kind of filter. I almost feel like I'm going to have to go back and watch it again because I feel like the film grain ramped up when the murder was happening.
Right, and I
it
feel
was
like, yeah, and that's okay, you know. I just feel like, I mean, it was fine. It wasn't like it destroyed the film. It's not like it detracted from, to the point where I was like, oh, that's bad. I just walked away going, I'm sure on the filmmaker's next outing, with a little bit more funding and more experience, he's gonna kill it even harder next time.
No pun intended.
Pun intended. the second thing that I disliked immensely was the music.
Yeah, you know what it
did
was?
Did not like the music.
Anybody who's a big fan of horror or slasher films can tell you that the music is just as much of a character
right.
in horror movies in terms of setting the pace, setting the tone, setting the scene. And the biggest problem I have with that is there wasn't really any in it. And what I mean, there was music, but it was forgettable.
But that's the point.
And it was so
mixed
down.
I'm going to explain this right now. And this is the thing that A, killed me, and B, says everything about your statement. Yeah, there was music in it from start to finish.
None of it
you couldn't
out.
Remember any of it because it was so forgettable.
Well,
now I'm not
mixed down. It was just like you couldn't hear it, most of it.
Yeah, it was. It was really behind everything. But the issue that I had was that a film of this level deserves an iconic and an epic being relative, score and a theme to go with the film that drives it. Now, it says worlds that the film was able to continue doing what it did with the music being so off.
Yeah, but had now, good characterization in the music been there, it would have amplified Art as a character.
Of course. And I think the biggest issue that I had with it was that, and look, writing scores, that's a difficult thing to do. Creating a score for a film, that's a hard thing to do. Like, you know, people don't realize how necessary it is to the story and at the same time how difficult it is to emote through music what the characters are feeling.
But this movie suffered from forgetting Sarah Marshall scoring. What should I score for this scene? I don't know, man. You know, something dark and ominous.
Like, and I feel bad. I think one of the guys that's a part of Marilyn Manson's band did the music. I don't remember which one did. But I think it was one of those cats. And, like, it's fine. Like I said, he's fine. What he did was fine. But the big issue that I had, 80% of what's going on there are loops from the Native Instruments complete library.
Womp womp.
You know, seriously, like this is stuff that if you are a Native Instruments user, if you use
it's familiar
Complete,
to you.
No, I was like pulling up, I was recalling patches for Audrey and playing them on my keyboard and going like, hey, check it out. I scored Terrifier. Bum, bum, bum.
Of course you were. Know,
it's rough, man. Like you hold down C on the damage loop and it's don't, don't. Like that's the score, and you're kind of sitting there going.
So what you're saying is a member of Marilyn Manson got paid to do nothing,
right? He was like, I've been working real hard on this, and it was like 80% loops. Right, come on, man. Yeah, so that was the only thing that didn't jive with me that made me feel like man,
missed opportunity.
It's a missed opportunity. This film is good enough and it's strong enough on its own merit that it needs a score that will go with it. And that was what I walked away with. So that was my number one biggest complaint with the entire thing. Yeah, for me, I'm going to be a little bit more critical. But I'm also a little upset. You know, it's like being a car salesman. And then you see the fucking saw coming out of the gas tank. The dust, like, coming out of the gas tank from the guy across the street that sold the car to somebody else. You're sitting there going, like, you know, you clearly just showed up, sold a beat-up car.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, you know, come on, man. Like, just if you're going to use the damn loop, at least rewrite it.
Yeah,
make it more interesting. Like, you know, come on. Like, I don't know.
So all that says is that you care.
I do care. Well, and that's the thing. Like, but I hear that shit in car commercials and stuff all the time. Like, you know, where you're like watching TV or you see a YouTube ad pop up and you're like, oh, hey, whoever got paid $20,000 to do this ad, he found out what Native Instruments is. You know, like we all
you hear
know.
That stuff all the time from the libraries.
It's
the default libraries.
You do.
Yeah, because the person buying the product doesn't know.
They don't know.
So I want to talk about one more thing to kind of button this up.
Yep.
The we didn't talk about the very, very beginning, the opening scene of this movie where, you know, characters being interviewed on TV. They kind of full circle loop the ending into the beginning of the movie.
Right.
Which is kind of vague.
I actually called it.
How so?
I said, okay, so in the beginning of the film, there's a completely separate murder that happens, and it's committed by a girl with a disfigured face, right? I actually thought that was going to be Tara, Jenna Connell's character. Because I was like, that's the same character, that's the same girl. When I saw them introduce her sister, and I kind of got the feeling she was going to be taking over, I actually remember looking straight at Audrey going, like, that's the girl, she's going to get disfigured.
Well, but then it kind of begs the question, I mean, Art the Clown clearly was not dead by the end of that movie, does it then become an Amanda Saw kind of thing, where like maybe she paints some fucked up clown shit on her disfigured face and goes out and do some gnarly shit, because she clearly lost her shit.
Well, what I'm going to put out there... So, right, our final girl in this film, just to tie it together, our final girl in this film becomes a murderer.
Bucks another trope and becomes a murderer.
Right, so
she survives
herself,
the experience, but she's not in good shape afterwards.
But once again, tying it back to the character name, to the theme of the entire film and what it's all about, good art changes you and it inspires you. So I feel like the message there, in some twisted way, was, you know, artistically, this homicidal clown man came in, changed this woman's life forever, and now she herself has been inspired to become that thing, to wreak that havoc on other people. I can't speak, you know. So we also didn't see that she killed the reporter in the beginning. We saw that she mangled her face.
Yeah.
So how do we know that it's not going to happen again
just
and again?
It's just a passing down of the...
You know, in the exact same way that, you know, all it took was a 25-year-old psychopath to put a mask and a top hat on and start showing up at bars playing shows, and then you had people start showing up at bars in masks. Like, you know, that's the thing. Like, you make art, you inspire other people with that art, and then it becomes their own thing, and they start to inspire others
through people
it.
With it, yeah.
That's what good art does, right? Like, there's no such thing as a completely, truly original idea. We're all borrowing ideas. We're all repurposing ideas and getting them back out there into the world. And I feel like this film, in the weirdest way possible, has a very strong message about artistic integrity, which I think is a strange
thing. If you... if you come up against adversity, just shoot it in the face.
Just shoot it in the face. You know, and I think that's kind of a cool thing, because this guy, the guy who made the film, Damien Leone, he's clearly indie, very underground. You can tell that this guy is making what he wants to make because that's what he wants to make. And I respect that, and I like that. And in my world, that's two Mr. Agitator top hats up.
Is that? Did that's you just the pull a rating system out
that's
of your
our
ass?
That's our rating system from now on. Oh my I give God. It one top hat up.
Yeah. You know, that'll be your rating. Every time you make terrible jokes about your hat, I'm going to, like, Nick's rating system is two top hats up, and my rating system is, I don't want to play in this band anymore.
That's right. So, no, that's, for me, that's Terrifier. It's insane. It's a journey.
It's a lot of fun. Watch it. Don't take it too seriously. We probably made it. We probably analyzed it far more than we have any business analyzing.
Yeah, probably.
But watch it. It's the perfect type of, like, low stress horror movie, the slasher horror movie for Halloween, for the season. Just watch it. It's a shitload of fun. You already have a Netflix subscription. Just watch the fucking thing and enjoy it.
Absolutely. Well, I think that about calls it for this episode of V is for Villains podcast, Terrifier.
That's right.
I don't know what this show's
T is
called.
For Terrifier.
V is for P. Can we call it V for P? Can that be the name of our podcast?
That's a terrible name.
Because then people think you're saying like prick or penis, and you're not.
No, you're not at all.
That's fun.
Fun. This is a fun note.
V for P. Vagina for pussy.
That's awful. I don't like that at all.
Oh, fuck.
But here's a fun side note, too. Anybody, while we're at the tail end of this recording, because anybody who's listening to this probably knows that I used to be on Gamerhead Radio. Charlie from Gamerhead is sitting right here. He's just quietly sitting right next to me.
Hi, Charlie.
Why is Charlie not on the microphone? Because he didn't have time to get here before we were recording. But Charlie's here.
I'm judging all of you.
I know. He is, too. That's true. All right. I think that wraps it up for this episode. Thank you.
was that technically a twist ending? Was that like
what a twist?
By the way,
M. Night Shyamalan couldn't have written it any better. Hey, by the way, this dude that you listened to 200 episodes of on a show is not saying a word in the background.
There's the twist.
Oh God.
Jesus Christ.
Next time, Charlie. Last time, so it was like Terrence Howard in Iron Man. Next time, and then they replaced him. We're going to replace you with Don Cheadle, Charlie.
And we're just going to pretend like he's Charlie.
Amazing.
It's Charlie. What are you talking about?
That's true. We can't afford Don Cheadle. Moving on. Thank you for listening to this episode of
Don
whatever
Charlie?
The fuck this is. Don Charlie.
Don Charlie.
That's either Charlie's wrestler name or his porno name or maybe his porno wrestling name. I don't know which one.
Don Chartle.
We need to hashtag Don Charlie and then just post
Don
pictures
Charlie.
Of Charlie.
I'm in.
Anyways, though, thank you guys for listening to the episode. We're really awesomely excited that we could...
Good job. I'm congratulating yourself there, by the way.
No.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. By the way, we're awesome.
That's not what I said.
Awesome. No, I'm pulling this audio back out. That's where you
Is
were.
Is that
going.
What I said?
That's what you said. You were like, thanks for listening to this podcast.
You
we're
cut,
awesome,
you
by the way.
Together a blooper reel. You got to cut together a blooper reel at the end of this fucking thing.
We have a blooper reel. It's called the fucking show.
It's called the show. An hour long blooper reel.
That's all it is. There's the name of the show.
We're, really, honestly, very excited about being able to kind of bring this back for Halloween season. Nick and I have talked about doing this almost every Halloween for the last handful of years, but the problem is we're always booked and or playing around Halloween time, and it makes it very hard to produce
True.
These things like we did years ago. So thank you guys for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed the review. Hope you enjoyed Terrifier, because you should watch it.
Yep, check it out. I am Mr. Agitator.
I'm Fallon Flynn.
And we're awesome.